Thursday, March 19th, a very busy Connecticut Today. We kept you up to date minute by minute with the changing news surrounding the coronavirus outbreak. We spoke to a respiratory therapist from Southern Connecticut State University on what COVID-19 actually does to human lungs if it gets that far and the challenges being faced by healthcare professionals. And also joining us to talk about the impact on a local level, the mayor of Norwalk, Harry Rilling. Joan, hi. Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm well.
Well, thanks for coming on, Joan. We appreciate it. As a respiratory person in this business who makes this your life, what do you think so far? Give me an overall view, Joan, of what you're seeing, what the professionals in your field are saying, and where you think we're headed with this.
Sure. I mean, things are changing quickly. They're changing almost hourly. Things in my profession that are happening today looked markedly different than a week ago and certainly than 2 weeks ago. Even, you know, across the whole community, we have schools closed, we have sports being canceled, everybody's working from home. So there's a big difference between what we considered our normal a week or two ago and what we consider our new normal now. So as respiratory professionals, we are definitely out there on the front line, making sure that we can do the best for our patients and provide them the kind of supportive care that we need and be high-level functioning members of the healthcare team.
The human lungs, the whole respiratory system, they are amazing things, taking in oxygen, exchanging that oxygen, breathing out carbon dioxide. But I would assume, Joan, that what you've seen and heard regarding this coronavirus can really have deleterious effects to the respiratory system.
Absolutely. I mean, the COVID-19 virus is a respiratory virus. So right out of the gate, we are going to see people having respiratory symptoms. So, you know, sort of the first line symptoms that we're seeing people reporting, that fever, the shortness of breath. So there's that respiratory component, that dry cough, and even sort of what we call malaise, which might be that feeling of just not feeling terrific, kind of under the weather. But that's really, you know, we're starting to see that amongst the patient population. And so if you think about a normal healthy person, and if you ask them to breathe through a straw that you might get at McDonald's, well, it wouldn't be that uncomfortable. You wouldn't want to be breathing through a straw all day long, but you could certainly do it. Now take that same scenario and imagine breathing through a coffee straw. See, envision how a coffee stirrer is so much more narrow and how difficult it would be to breathe through that. So that's what it's going to feel like for these patients that have this onset of this COVID-19. Particularly if they deteriorate into a point where they're completely respiratory compromised.
And I would assume then, Joan, that no matter what the deterioration, or let me rephrase that, no matter how much maybe supplemental oxygen you could give somebody here or whatever therapies you try to induce, you know, when they have a diminished capacity, that's what you're battling here, correct?
Absolutely. And oxygen would certainly be a supportive measure that we, you know, would provide for the patients, and that would be something that could be managed quite easily. The concern comes as the patient becomes more acute. If they end up in the intensive care unit with something we call ARDS, acute respiratory distress syndrome, and that's the true critical patient that we're concerned about. So those patients end up on a ventilator where a mechanical ventilator is breathing for them. Their lungs have become, there's a sort of a widespread inflammation throughout the lungs, which prevents the oxygen from exchanging over that alveolar capillary membrane in order to get oxygen out to the tissue. So then the oxygen, without being out to the tissues, the person is now pretty compromised at that point if we can't feed the tissues with oxygen. So all of these problems that we are anticipating, we're particularly concerned about with the elderly or with other individuals that have what we call comorbidities. So in other words, they have another illness on top of it. And it could be a pulmonary illness like a history of emphysema or a history of asthma, or maybe a lung injury from smoking or a lung injury from vaping even. Or it could be other illnesses that the person has that makes them a more compromised or vulnerable population, such as high blood pressure or individual with diabetes, or maybe they have an autoimmune disorder or something like that. So those comorbidity patients and the elderly are really, really who we're concerned about with regard to that the insult that's going to come from the COVID-19.
Joan Krieger is the guest. She coordinates the respiratory therapy program at Southern Connecticut State University. So, Joan, I would imagine some of the folks in your field, respiratory therapists and all, this is kind of a double whammy here, isn't it? Because you mentioned the scarring, the inflammation of the interior of the lung, the exchange, the tissue exchange areas with oxygen. And then, at the same time, the body is letting loose with its own immune system response on top of that, correct?
Absolutely. And so, again, these are the patients that we're concerned about, so, you know, the critical patients. But there's a big gap between sort of getting the onset of the symptoms and full-blown ARDS. I don't want to mislead anyone to think that everybody's going to go into ARDS. So people that have a fever or a cough, they're being asked to stay home. So this is a virus. There's no cure for the virus. So going to the hospital is not going to help someone, particularly individuals that have mild symptoms. All they're going to end up doing is exposing other people, and they're going to end up clogging up the health system. And really, that's one of the reasons that we're implementing all of these public health measures now, like social distancing and good hand hygiene. That is to allow us to maximize the health resources that we know are going to be hit further down the line as we get into that peak. Everyone's talking about that flatten the curve phrase. That's not just not just empty words. That actually means something. We are trying to strategically plan for the insult that's coming further down into the future with this.
Joan,
so
fine.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Finally, I just want to wrap up with this. I'm no therapist. I'm no professional like you are. However, I'm going to bet, Joan, correct me if I'm wrong, that if a person smokes or if they vape, right now might be a good idea to stop that or at least try. Am I crazy here or not?
I think you're absolutely right on the money. I mean, as a respiratory therapist, we always want our patients to stop smoking. So if you haven't done that yet, now would be the perfect time to go ahead and try, or at least cut down on the amount of smoking so that we can try to get your lungs to the point where you might be in a little bit better shape in case you get exposed to the COVID-19.
Joan, one other thing I wanted to stick in here. You know, we're seeing all these things on the internet and social media about lung exercises and all this, but what would a person feel in their lungs? What is the trigger of, hey, I'm really having trouble breathing here? Is it just the inability to take in easily a full two lungs full of air? Is a person generally going to know when something's wrong here?
Sure. They are going to feel that sensation of shortness of breath. So and it will be relative to what that person's baseline is. So if a person could normally walk up two flights of stairs, now they're finding that they're getting fatigued walking up half a flight of stairs. They're really winded and short of breath. That would be an indicator. So it is something that people are going to, you know, who have shortness of breath, they don't need a big description on that. They simply realize, oh, my goodness, I'm getting short of breath here. And it may be accompanied by a cough. It may be accompanied by a fever. So those are the kind of mild symptoms that we're going to ask people to check in with your healthcare provider, or there are numerous resources out there. There are hotlines set up by the major medical institutions in the state. And even in Connecticut, now you can call 211 for information. So we're asking people to be vigilant, but also be responsible in terms of how they're reaching out to the healthcare system. So we want to do everything we can to put our resources to the individuals that are going to need it down the line. And, of course, we're asking everybody to be vigilant about hand washing and social distancing.
Joan Krieger, thank you, coordinator of the Respiratory Therapy Program at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. Joan, thank you, and hopefully we can talk in the future. Thanks, we appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Joan. Appreciate it. Well, folks, there you go. Mentioned it's been a rather hectic, not just few days, but a few weeks for folks like you, administrators in cities and towns, big and small here in the state.
Yes, it has, Paul, and thank you for having me on. It's very challenging, but we're getting through it. You know, we're in uncharted waters. We've not experienced anything like this before, but we're meeting on a regular basis, communicating with each other, and taking the best steps we possibly can.
And, Mayor, unfortunately, I know the second death here in the state was a resident of your city, correct?
Yes, I believe that was just announced a short while ago, actually.
So as an administrator, Mayor, you look at this And what is your first thought, maintaining police services, fire services, first responders? Of course, you, for several years, involved with the Norwalk Police, running the department. When you realized, hey, this was serious, what was your first thought?
The first thought is keeping the city, the citizens in the community safe and healthy. Also, finding the best way we can continue delivering the critical services that a government, a municipality, has to deliver, regardless of the situation. You know, we have garbage collection, we have police and fire protection, emergency medical services, those kinds of things. But we also have things that sometimes people don't realize. When people are scheduled to do a house closing, they need to get documents from the town clerk's office. When people are need to get home inspections for construction that is going on. So those are the kinds of things that you set up appointments for. So obviously, if somebody needs an appointment for a document at town clerk's office, we'll set an appointment to make sure that they can get them. But we also have to do a lot of online things, so we want to increase our ability to do that.
Yeah, Mayor, by the way, I just want to correct something. That death was at Norwalk Hospital. The man who actually died, he was a 91-year-old from New Canaan, but it was in one of your local hospitals. You know, you mentioned something there that somebody had actually in the news business mentioned to me, Mayor, and I read actually a feature story on the other day. We hear about the first responders. We hear about, you know, EMT, fire, police, of course, whom we love. And, you know, Mayor Ganim talked about that live on our air in Bridgeport. But you mentioned sanitation workers, you know, garbage men and women in cities big and small. And they really are on the front lines of this as much as anybody else is. And they face, you know, potentially hazardous condition with not just regular garbage, but, you know, garbage in a scenario where there's an active contagion around.
Yes, you know, they have to be out there. We have to collect the garbage. It's a sanitarian thing that we have to do. We have to make sure that our streets are clean. But also, let's not forget the 911 dispatchers that have to go to work. Let's not forget the people that are working in food service and grocery stores. You know, they're the real heroes and sheroes of the day, people that are out there doing the job, putting themselves in harm's way, but understanding that they have a critical function to provide.
Mayor Rilling, hang on. We'll be right back to you. First, we check traffic and weather together right here. It is Connecticut Today. The guest for a few minutes, he's takes some time out of his busy day to talk to us. Harry Rilling, the mayor of Norwalk. 236, traffic and weather together on the sixes here on WICC 600 and 95.9 The Fox. And we are here at 2:38, almost 2:39, 21 before 3. Thanks for joining us, WICC 600 and 95.9 The Fox. Norwalk Mayor Harry Rilling continues to be the guest. Mayor, we're into the thick of this now. So as a chief executive, as you and the men and women who run our municipalities all throughout the state are doing, you're obviously looking ahead, I would think. You have got your economic development people, your business leaders. You're talking with them saying, okay, on the other side of this, once the disease aspect of this is under control or cleared, what kind of challenges are you and your fellow leaders in Norwalk facing?
Well, the main challenge is going to be to the small businesses that are impacted by this and some of the local tourist attractions like the Maritime Aquarium and Stepping Stones Museum. They all rely on that revenue stream. And when that revenue stream is disrupted, interrupted, that really is a major impact on them. So one of the things that really has to happen is the federal government and the state government, if possible, we need to find a way that we can help those with either some grants or some low-interest loans and those kinds of things. That's going to be the biggest impact for us going forward.
And, you know, Mayor, it's, you know, people have been trying to compare this to, you know, whatever, you know, this, that, and history. There really is no comparison when you think about it, because in wartime or 9/11, those are specific, generally localized events. For lack of a better term, Mayor, the American economy is looking to be, you know, not completely shut down, but a big chunk of it for 3 to 4 months here. I mean, that's something that I don't think you can prepare for.
No, this is something, as I said, this is something that nobody in this modern age has dealt with something like this. You know, you go back to the Depression and those kinds of that issue. But this is something really, really different. And this is not only impacting our country, but it's the global economy. It's China, Italy, all throughout Europe and the United Kingdom. And it's really affecting so many people worldwide.
So is part of the answer here when we emerge from this and you're looking at the city's finances, talking with Wall Street, having your city attorneys and your city investment people saying, what can we do here? Maybe for, as you say, some grants or maybe some low interest loans here. Is that, do you think, on the map as well?
Not so much at the local level, because the local governments don't have the capacity to grant. To give grants to a great degree, but on the federal and state level, that's where we'll be looking to see what can be done. Yes.
What? You obviously are talking with constituents, with business owners, with just citizens during this. What are you hearing? Are you hearing outright fear, Mayor? Are you hearing uncertainty? Are you hearing a stick-to-it attitude that will be okay? What are some of the things you're hearing from folks?
Well, of course, we hear a good degree of concern. Some people are more fearful than others. Some people are willingly accepting the social isolation, social distancing concept. Others not so much. You know, one of the concerns that we have seems that with the schools out, a lot of young people are congregating for pickup basketball games and lacrosse and those kinds of things. And that's really concerning to us. I don't want to have to close the beaches or parks because we have to have some place for people to go and get some exercise. But when young people are congregating in groups, that's not going to stop or slow the spread of the virus. It's going to keep it going. We're kind of hoping that we can get the word out to young people and to their parents to really have a heart-to-heart talk with them and say, look, you know, you really have to stay home. Don't go out in groups. Don't play the basketball games and pick up things. You can get very bored during this time, and they're looking for things to do, but we really need to maintain that distance, that social distancing.
So in your city, Mayor Rilling, if your officers or law enforcement see, you know, scattered people walking in Soho, in Sono rather, or maybe one or two guys playing basketball or maybe three or four people on the beach, is that okay? In other words, there won't be something said to them. It's just the big groups that are going to be urged to spread out. Is that the way it's going to be?
Well, you know, the rule of thumb now is no groups of over 10 or 20 people, and keep that 6-foot distance. Those basketball games, you oftentimes find people bumping up into each other and touching each other. When I go down through the beach, which I go down a couple of times a day and check the parks and make sure that things are okay, I see you know, a husband and wife or a father and son, a mother and son, you know, just walking through the beach, that's fine. You know, we're looking at the groups of people that would congregate and be in close proximity to each other.
And I, you know, those beaches, Mayor, I've had so many people say that to keep their sanity over the past couple of weeks, the first place they go, if it's warm enough, is their local town beach. I don't know, is it something about the sand, the water, the birds, maybe?
Yeah, it's all of the above. We have a beautiful beach here in Norwalk, and our parks department does an amazing job. But, you know, people, I believe, you know, have to have some place to go. And the last thing I want to do, only as a last resort, is to close down the beach. I want people to be able to get out, get a little exercise, be out in the fresh air. But as long as they do so responsibly and, you know, they employ those universal precautions.
Mayor, finally, if there's a business owner in your city in the Norwalk area who's listening to us now and say, yeah, you know what, I know we'll come out of this, but I don't know about the future of my business here. I'm really scared about that. What would you tell them?
I tell them to stay in touch with all the recent releases. I would tell them to keep mindful of the loans that might be available to them. I would tell them to reach out to their banks and find out if there's any assistance there or if they can put off making any payments on any loans they do have now. And I would say that on the other side, you know, hopefully we're going to come out of this okay. And I would also say to the people in the community, now is the time to support the small businesses, the restaurants that are providing pickup services and delivery services. You know, it's all of us working together, joining in and doing our part that's going to help us get through this as quickly as we possibly can.
Harry Rilling, the mayor of Norwalk. Mayor, thank you for taking the time out. Anytime you want to come on, you have my phone number, so give me a call. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'd be more than happy to do that for updates anytime that we can. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks, Mayor. Appreciate it. We'll talk in the future. Norwalk Mayor Harry Rilling, right?